I wonder if you've ever played the trust game. I must admit, I haven't played it for many, many years. But it's where someone stands behind you. I'm not going to do it, obviously. And you have to fall back, trusting that they're going to catch you. Yeah? Now, I remember seeing a video once where the people doing it had pushed the trust level needed even further. They had blindfolded the person who was going to fall back. So that person didn't even have the benefit of seeing the person that was going to catch them and to sort of know that they were there. Because whenever I've done it, you always do like this, don't you? You sort of like, just, yeah, you know, there's... In fact, that situation was a bit unfortunate, it has to be said, because in the video, as the man who was blindfolded, he basically misheard the instructions. And so instead of falling backwards, he fell forwards and then just landed on the floor. Oops. So you see, for them, that was obviously a trust on test, but also on listening skills. And I think he failed on that one, and it probably hurt his nose, I think it would be fair to say. But I was reminded of that video when I was thinking about the passage that we've had read, because the importance of those two things, of listening well and responding in the right way, and then also the need to trust, are two aspects that get brought out by the passage that we're listening today. The importance of listening and trusting when it comes to Jesus. So let's look a bit at the passage. Let's see what we can learn from it. And again, as I say every time, there is so much in this passage. Please go and read it again during the week, because I can just pick out certain bits, but there are even so much more that we can learn from. So firstly, I want to start by looking at the reaction of the Samaritan people after the woman at the well had come running into town and told them about Jesus. They listened to her and they were amazed by what she said, and then they asked Jesus to stay for a couple of days, and he did, and we're told that many came to believe in him. But I think the next verse is very interesting. In verse 42, we read, "They said to the woman, 'We no longer believe just because of what you said. Now we have heard for ourselves, and we know that this man really is the saviour of the world.' The woman's testimony had piqued their interest, but through spending time with Jesus, they had now made a decision for themselves to follow him, to believe in him. It was their decision. And as I read this, it took me back to a time when I was about 15 or 16. I'd been going to church all my life, and it was something that I did with my parents every week, and it was part of my life. But I was also very aware that for most of my other friends at school and most of my other relatives, including my sister, this isn't something they did. It just wasn't part of their life. And people were sort of questioning as to, when I was at school, as to why I would do this. Why on earth would I go to church? And so I had to stop, and I came to the realization that actually, I had to make a decision for myself. Is this something that I believe in? Is this something that I believe is true? Or am I just doing it because that's what I've done for ever since I've been born, basically? I do it because of my parents. As you may realize, and as you're probably glad to hear, because I'm standing here, I came to the heartfelt and deep conclusion, after doing a bit of reading, after praying about it, after thinking about it, after listening to other people and asking other people questions, I came to the conclusion that God is real. And I knew that Jesus had died for me. And I knew that he made a difference in my life. And so I responded personally. Just like the Samaritan people, I had to make a decision based on my own response to Jesus. It isn't about what my parents believe. I mean, it's great that my parents believe, don't get me wrong. And that is such an encouragement to me, and we can encourage each other. But I had to make that decision for myself. Because it's a decision that changes your life. Because it changes how you see the world. It changes how you act. It changes how you respond. It changes about what is important to you. It's why in Baptist churches we wait until someone is older before we baptize them. And then when we do baptize them, we give them a good old dunk. They know they've been baptized when we've done it, because it's, you know, full in, full out. But it recognizes that it is up to the individual to say, I want to follow Jesus. I want to believe. And once they can say that and want to say that, then we rejoice by baptizing them. If that's something that you have thought about, or something that interests you, or you wonder, or you have questions about it, do come and speak to me about it, why we baptize people. So as we see in this passage, it is important for each of us, isn't it, to make our own commitment to Jesus and to give our hearts to him. But it's also important that those of us that are Christians give people opportunities to hear the gospel and to hear about Jesus. Jesus stayed with the Samaritans and he spoke with them. I can imagine there were lots of discussion, lots of chat, lots of teaching, and through that they came to see Jesus for who he truly was and is, the Saviour of the world. And for those who love him and follow him, we too need to be ready and willing to share Jesus with those we meet who don't know him, who maybe also have questions. And it's important that we let them ask those questions. And it's also important to realize that we may not have all the answers. And that's okay. That's okay. We can say, well, actually, I'm not sure about that. Why don't we look at it together? Yeah? We don't have to have all the answers to talk to people about Jesus. Because as we share, then we can start, like the Samaritan woman, to help people on that journey of faith. But secondly, though, there is a sort of a caveat to that as well, because I want us to look at verses 43 and 44, because it says this. It says, after 2 days, he left for Galilee. Now, Jesus himself had pointed out that a prophet has no honor in his own country. And numerous times in the Gospels, we see that Jesus is often turned away or rejected by the people in his homeland, maybe those who know him. In fact, a couple of chapters later in John, we read of people grumbling about Jesus, and they're saying, is this not Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How can he now say that I came down from heaven? And you can just imagine it, can't you? Sort of all those people that have grown up with him and have played together as they've grown up. And they're sort of like saying, he grew up with the rest of us. He walked the same roads. He ate the same food. And now he's saying he's the son of God. Yeah, right. And I'm the Queen of Sheba. I think that's the phrase, isn't it, that people use. And it can be hard sometimes to share. It was hard for Jesus because he knew that actually people who knew him, grown up with, actually really struggled to accept him for who he truly was. And I wonder if this strikes a chord with you, because sometimes, and it may not be for you, but sometimes I think it is harder to share the faith we have with people who we know best. Yep. Or we have known for a long time. Especially if we become a Christian later in life sometimes, because, you know, you get the call yourself a Christian. You know, I remember when you had a go at me or pushed me off my bike when we were kids. Or, you know, I remember when you stole that mini roll from grandma's table and then you swore blind you hadn't. You know, that kind of thing, you know, because you've got to be perfect, haven't you, once you're a Christian. You haven't, by the way, because we all make mistakes. But, you know, that's sometimes how people think, isn't it? You know, oh, well, I remember when you did this. I remember when you did that. Call yourself a Christian. You're saying you're a Christian now, are you? Yeah. Do they know what you used to do? Jesus wipes all that away. That's the wonder of grace. Sometimes it can be hard with family, isn't it? Because you don't see them very often. And you don't want to get into a discussion that then gets into a little bit awkward and things like that. And it can be hard. Do you know, I find it rather comforting that Jesus struggled with the same problems sometimes. I really do. I find that really comforting. If you do find yourself in that situation, can I just encourage you to keep being you? Because that's what Jesus did. Jesus kept being himself. He didn't try to change himself. He didn't try to say that he was something else. He just kept being himself. He kept doing what he had been called to do. And can I just encourage you to keep being you, to just keep living the life that you were called to. Don't worry that people may be waiting for you to slip up so they can go, there you are. I told you. Just keep living the life that Jesus calls you to. Because you know what? Ultimately, that can be the best witness ever. We were talking about this in Bible study a couple of weeks ago, where actually sometimes it can be who we are and the fact that people know we go to church and the fact that maybe we just have a different attitude that actually speaks to people sometimes in ways that we don't even know it's happening. Keep being you. And also maybe pray for others to come alongside those you find it hard to share your faith with. Ask God to bring alongside them friends and others who can share Jesus with them more easily. Give it over to God and trust in him that he will put people in their path. And that's the last thing I want to mention today, the importance of trust. And we see it in the response of the royal official who comes to see Jesus as his son is very sick and is dying. And this man would have travelled for hours, probably a good over 24 hours, to get to see Jesus. Just so that he could ask Jesus and say to Jesus, come with me, please, come with me. My son is ill, I want you to come with me so that you can be with him and you can heal him. But is that what Jesus does? No, it's not. Jesus says to the man, go, your son will live. Jesus is not going to go with the man, but tells him that all will be okay. But just for a moment, stop and imagine if you were that man. You've traveled for hours, well over 24 hours, to get to speak to this person. And the thing you think is most important is for that person to come with you to see your son, and he says he's not going to do it, but he says it's going to be okay. What are you going to do? Are you going to turn back and trust that all is well? Are you going to trust the word of this man, Jesus, that all is well? That man had to make a decision. Did he trust Jesus? Was he willing to accept that although Jesus hadn't done what he wanted, Jesus hadn't gone with him, that he had still healed his son? Could that man walk away in trust? We are told in verse 50 that the man took Jesus at his word and departed. And then we are told that his servants met him with the news that his son had got better the day before, just when it meant he was talking to Jesus. That was trust, wasn't it? Are we willing to trust Jesus like that? Even when things don't happen the way they should or the way we think they should. Or our prayers aren't answered in the way we think they should be or in the time we think they should be. Are we willing to trust when the way ahead seems really uncertain, or we feel God calling us in one direction when, frankly, we would really like to go in the other? When we find ourselves saying, no, God, I really don't think that's for me. I think you're talking to the person next to me, aren't you? You know, that's not for me. But God's saying, yes, it is. Do we trust him that it's right? I wrote this sermon on Thursday, and in the morning, sorry, Elaine, I'm going to mention you again. I do apologise. I did it last week. I'm doing it this week. Elaine is now looking really scared. I wrote this sermon on Thursday, and in the morning, Elaine had put a quote up on Facebook. See, it's okay. It's all right. And I have to say, it really spoke to me about trust and about what I was preaching about. So I wanted to share it with you this morning. It said this. It said, God can do more in a blink of an eye than we can do in a lifetime. So trust his plan and trust his timing. I'll say that again. God can do more in a blink of an eye than we can do in a lifetime. So trust his plan and trust his timing. Easier said than done, but that is what we're called to do. That is what we're called to do. The royal official thought that Jesus had to be with his son for his son to be healed. But he trusted Jesus when he said that wasn't the case. trusted him with his own son's life, really. May we too have that trust as we seek to live our lives following him. May we trust in his plan and in his timing. In a few moments, we're going to share communion together. And for me, that is also a really powerful act and symbol of listening and trusting, as well as many other things as well. Because we share in communion together as a church family because we have listened to the words shared by Jesus at his Last Supper. Words that ask his followers to keep eating bread and drinking wine in memory of Jesus and all that he has done for us. And so that is what we do. We listen and we respond. It is also a symbol of trust as we trust and rejoice in the fact that all that just as all he said would happen in the past, that it did, and all that is happening in the present is happening, that also we trust when he says that one day he will come again. And that for all of us who believe, when our time on this earth is over, we will be with him in glory forever. And so we trust in his promises for this life, but also for the eternal life to come. We trust in them. And so as we take bread and wine, as we will do in a few minutes, it's those symbols and that recognition that we have listened and we have heard what Jesus has said and we have responded. And it's a way for us to say, Jesus, I trust in you. I trust in all that you have done for me. I trust in your love for me. I trust in your sacrifice for me. And I want to follow you in all that I do. Before we take communion, I'd like us to sing again. And I'd like us to sing the song, "The Lord's My Shepherd, I Shall Not Want. I will trust in you alone." And I pray that if that is something that actually you want to do, that you would really use these words as a response to what we've been thinking about. So that when you sing, "I will trust in you alone, I will trust in you alone," I pray that you'd mean those words. And they would be a response to Jesus today. So if you're able, let's stand and sing together. Thank you, James.